once was a swagman camped in a billabong under the shade of a cool lubba tree, and he sang as he looked at his old billy boiling, "Who'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me? Who'll come a-waltzing Matilda, my darling? Who'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me? Waltzing Matilda and leading a water bag. Who'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me?" Down came a jumbug to drink at the waterhole. Up jumped the swagman and grabbed him with glee. And he sang as he stowed him away in his tucker bag, "You'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me. Who'll come a-waltzing Matilda, my darling? Who'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me? Waltzing Matilda and leading a water bag. Who'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me?" Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Arnie Lukes here at freedompotentials.org. And I'd like to welcome you to episode 2. The considerations I have for today are always about freedom, and equally important is the fact that how do we actually define freedom? And I want to actually go to our library and show you in the first instance the Social Credit Library. You'll find it up in the navigation bar on the right, Social Credit Library. And I wanted to highlight that, yes, you've got Douglas, you've got Butler, you've got many other writers, but really importantly, you've got this bloke called Geoffrey Dobbs. And Geoffrey Dobbs was a botanist, scientist, and his work, from my point of view, is easy listening. It's easy reading, and it's a very important consideration if you're actually going to attempt to understand what social credit is about, what societies do in order to establish and to maintain culture, maintain civilization, then you need to read Geoffrey Dobbs. He's a master at what he does, and he's certainly good reading, and certainly thought provoking. Now, I'm going to touch on our manual that we're working through, which is the Social Credit Introductory Booklet, Lecture 1. And what it talks about, and it's very important to consider, is that when Douglas is talking about freedom, he's talking at essentially at three levels or three points of view at the same time. Now, the first point to consider in freedom is that you actually have freedom of choice. You have freedom of choice in that you have to choose or refuse one thing at a time. You have freedom of thought. Now, in your thoughts, you have to be able to express your thoughts in order to consider them, in order to place them out on the, if you like, the domain of public opinion. Place them out for consideration and discussion. Very important that you have freedom of speech, freedom of thought, and obviously the right to choose or refuse. So this in itself is you can use the, if you like, that definition to recognize where there are encroachments on your freedom. Freedom being essentially something that is metaphysical. It's not just the physical. You can be completely subdued and not have freedom at all, and yet be in the open air. We're experiencing a significant loss of our freedoms with this COVID-19 lockdown. We're experiencing it. This is firsthand what's actually going on in our life, is that we have social distancing. We can't actually go and visit the people who need to be visited. There are so many people in isolation, whether they're in nursing homes or they live alone or they are in desperate need of other human contact. And so this loss, this infringement on our freedom is socially destructive. And I believe it's more destructive than the actual threat or the outworking of COVID-19 itself. I think it causes greater pain to society. And of course, this is not just economic. This is cultural. This is spiritual. Hearing every day of people in isolation and that suffering. So to me, this loss of freedom, it's a spiritual thing. It's a metaphysical thing. We're not just carnal creatures. We are metaphysical. We think in terms of now and also eternity. We think in terms of considerations of love, of friendship, of honesty,
devotion, all these sort of ethical, moral things come into the equation of how we think. And so it really is important to consider this in the light of freedom of thought, freedom of speech, and freedom of action within the boundaries of responsibility. The second consideration Douglas talks about is the bureaucracy, the encroachment of the bureaucracy, the encroachment of laws over your life, where you can't do this, you can't do that. Again, COVID-19, proclamations, not things that were actually worked through and discussed and open to debate or consideration in our parliament, nor consideration through mainstream media, but it's actually in the bureaucracy, unaccountable bureaucracy, that there are proclamations done virtually weekly. A new consideration, a new thing. The parliament isn't discussing it, nor debating it, nor are the debates recorded on Hansard. These are private meetings and not considered, not open to scrutiny. Now, bearing in mind that it was William Cobbett, as a parliamentarian, William Cobbett, who originally initiated recording every single word that was spoken in parliament when he was a parliamentarian. And he did that, I believe, for 16 years as a parliamentarian. And it was on the basis that he could no longer maintain the printing company. He could no longer maintain it at that level of commitment. And so the printing company who recorded the writings, the utterances of parliament, was handed over to a bloke called Hansard, and that's how it originated. One man can make a difference. So encroachment of bureaucracy is the second point. The third point that I'd like to put on the table today is to obtain control of the forces of the crown, or to obtain control of the forces of government by genuine political democracy. Now, what that means, what Douglas is saying there, is that democracy isn't just a vote every 4 years, putting a mark on a piece of paper, and then the outcome, whether it's bona fide or it's bogus, that's not democracy. That's mob rule. And that's, we've got to consider there's an entirely different scenario consideration in this. Democracy is the right to choose or refuse those things and be also held accountable for those choices. Democracy is about freedom of choice. It's about where even a tyrant has to be able to be pulled back into line. Whether that tyrant is a bureaucrat, whether that tyrant is a politician, or any other form of public servant. And that's why I'd like to cut across to, as I said before, the screen here with Geoffrey Dobbs. And here it is. You look at this and you say, well, Geoffrey covers quite a lot of things, and in particular, environmental pollution, is social credit Christian, planning the earth, one man, one vote. These are such an array of types of consideration that you really do have to take into account, that there is a depth to what's going on. There is a depth to thinking, and it's not straightforward. It is not straightforward. It's a matter of deep thought and development. And so on that basis that it's not necessarily so squeezy, I want you to consider that freedom is the right to choose or refuse one thing at a time. It is the right to freedom of thought, freedom of speech, and freedom of action. And it's also holding bureaucrats to account, and of course, controlling democracy. These are all facets of what I consider to be something that is most important if you're going to be effective as an advocate for freedom. And that's what Freedom Potentials is about. And expressions of thought, expressions of speech, and of course, freedom of association. You should be free to be around people, especially the people in this lockdown who are in isolation and are suffering terribly. Your thoughts, please, Beata Lukes.
Definitely, we have suddenly lost a lot of our freedom. by being locked and gagged by some countries wearing masks and not having right to meet. It was a basic law. It came from people gathering together around the fire or around in a pub, perhaps in England, where the law would be discussed, where the customary law would become just that, customary law, which would eventually write into the common law. I don't think this is going to last because there is no correlation between what we're fearing, which is this boogeyman, and what we're seeing outside when we go out. So no wonder there is such unrest everywhere, where people are seeing through the blatant lie that is being perpetuated. And the only way out of it is just to switch off the TV and live your life. And this is the way you protest in the simplest way. Just refuse to accept the lie.
No worries. Thank you for that, Beata, because it what it shows to me is that, if you like, civil resistance is very important. And I know that there are, if you like, ancients, there are profound, now what would you call them? They're essentially statesmen, that's the word, who have warned us time and time again about the about freedom and security. They're not necessarily the same thing, that in actual fact, security, ideal security or perfect security is a jail. So you've got to consider, is that how much security you want, or do you have to actually exercise your freedom on a daily basis? Now, I wanted to place a thought on the table because I know that there are young people listening to this podcast. And the thought is essentially around the word eschatology. Eschatology is essentially a biblical study of end times. And I know a lot of churches are preaching end times. And I wanted to actually highlight, I believe they've got a completely wrong take on this end times. What they're doing is they're converting it into a form of fortune telling and selling an insurance policy. And I know that's a scathing thought, but that's my take on it. What I see as end times written in the Bible is when communities or nations choose to turn away from God. And the further they turn away, the closer they come to end times. So the fulfillment of these prophecies is, if you turn away from God, this is what happens. It is prophetic. If you turn away from God, this is what happens. Whereas if you turn towards God, what did Jesus teach us? He taught us about the lilies of the field, about a sparrow, even a sparrow falling to the ground, that God knows these things. He knows what you need. All these things I'll give unto you. But seek ye first the kingdom of God. It's a profound observation of the teachings of Christianity, that it's not a foregone conclusion. If we're heading in the wrong direction and these end times are coming at us like a steam train, then we've got to consider that maybe we need to turn away. Maybe we need to look at this whole equation again and turn back towards God. You're muted at the moment, Robert. Could you just turn your mic on and I'd like you to place your thoughts on the table about freedom. And I've placed eschatology or end times prophecy on it. You might want to pick that up or leave it alone. Your thoughts, Robert. Robert Klink's track was unusable, but his comments go something like this. For those that think that it is end times, the Bible teaches you that no man knows the hour, not even our Lord. And how presumptuous it would be to consider that somehow or other their virtue is of such a high standard that they would understand or they would know what the Christ himself does not. It is a form of narcissism themselves as essentially the reference that end times is for them, and of course it is not. They are not privileged, no more than any other people of any other time. He believes they will be quite upset when this destruction happens, and they do not avoid it. They actually feel the very brunt of it. It places them in a position where they have foregone their freedoms now, and they end up losing them, and their progeny losing their freedoms completely to the future. Thank you for that, Robert. That's a very important consideration. It leads me to come to the, if you like, the further consideration of people bugging out, and that is that they provide for themselves, they take supplies, they bury them, whatever, they secure them, and they're ready for this Holocaust. Now, I'm not suggesting that that's not prudent to take into account what is going on, but it's essentially an acceptance of collapse of society, of that everything is falling apart, and that there is no resolution to this dilemma that we find ourselves in. And unfortunately, I think that's well short of the mark. The challenges we've been placed in this time and space to overcome, and we have been placed in this time and space, in this time in history, to overcome. These challenges are before us, and they're not unprecedented. Other civilizations, other individuals have had to come to grips with this whole question. I think 100 years ago, my grandfather on my mother's side, my grandfather was, as a young man, was already in the middle of the First World War, and he was underage when he went, short pants, and he went to war because he considered that the threat was so real, and he stepped up to bat. And again, as a married father of, I think at that time, 6 children, he went to war again for the Second World War. So these challenges for him, to me, are very apparent in my mind. And I don't believe that they're unprecedented for previous generations either. It's always been there. The Christian knights, I call them the barons, but really they're Christian knights of 1215, of Magna Carta time. They went to a church and they took an oath, and a bishop, I think it was Stephen Langton, accepted that oath that they would pursue their ancient freedoms even unto death. So they placed, as a knight does, he places his armor before the altar, and he spent the night in prayer. They spend the night in prayer in preparation that if they have to fight, it will be a righteous fight and unto death, for these freedoms are well sought after and sorely missed when they're lost. So we've got to really take into account that this consideration of freedom, it's inherent within each one of us. Now, recognizing that we are, if you like, a society that is under a spell, and that spell is where we accept that government is all be all and end all benevolent, when in actual fact they're not. The government itself is encroaching more and more every day on our freedom. And the fact that government is becoming the employer of preference, you get on whatever it is that the government's going to pay. And so they're securing your future. But really, is it secure at all? Because what the government can give, the government can take away. So today you might consider that, I've got a job seeker or job keeper, or I've got some sort of financial support through child minding or something like that, or some tax relief, whatever. The latest fad, I think, is the builders, up to $25,000 reimbursement for money spent on renovations in order to prop up an ailing industry. Now, these are all on the government payroll. As I said, what the government gives, the government can take away. So it's you've really got to take a step back from this and ask yourself, do I really want big brother government babysitting over every single thing that I do? Do I want to have this infringement on my life? And what is it that past cultures have built up where they have resisted this? What is it that they've built up that is so profound and so desirous that they're prepared to give up everything in order to protect it or hold on to it or restore it? This thing called freedom. This thing called freedom. So it's we really do need to take another look. Now, cultures themselves, or if you like, the development of culture, is where people can trust each other. It's actually where two people can put their back to back and then pursue something, understanding that they won't spin on the spot and attack the person from their vulnerable side, but they trust. And that's what the word social credit means. It's actually faithful dealings. It's cohesion between peoples that they agree they can pursue a certain goal and they will achieve their objectives and at least directionally correct. So the term social credit is what I use, and I use it under the discipline of the trivium, being grammar, logic and rhetoric. So I'm quite happy to take debate on what this is, but it's very important that we use words for their true meaning. Social being society, and credit, credo, I believe. The building up of belief or faith in society. That's what social credit means. So we've got to consider these things, that it was the building up of social credit that makes society. It's make culture. It makes a belief system. It builds a belief system, or it reinforces an existing belief system. And in the Western world, that belief system was Christianity. It was founded on the teachings, if you like, of the Gospels. And in that teaching is the sanctity of the individual, the sacredness of the individual, that the individual must be free. The individual must not be a slave, but be free to make the choices that they choose and express their life as they choose to express it. And within the boundaries of responsibility and morality, they're free to come and go and do these things. And yet with the encroachment of government over the individual, then of course these things are lost. And so the social credit, the social cohesion, the faithful dealings between peoples is eroding more and more. Your thoughts, please, Beata Lukes.
Christianity is basically, even in the words of C.H. Douglas, it's that which works best. So obviously it's been tried and tried, and the best solutions were then adapted by the society and the community. We cannot forget those things, because if we do, then the evil forces basically come and take it all away and ruin everything for everyone. We can see it today. It's a martial law. It's a war on humanity, what we're seeing. Our government is working in cahoots with all those bureaucrats behind and gray, what are they, personages behind them to implement some evil plan, which is totally unacceptable.
No worries. Thank you for that, Beata. That's to me, that's exactly right. That if we turn away from our Christian principles, our Christian teachings, the sanctity of the individual, the right of the individual to express themselves, it's an interesting phenomena, because I consider in this first module that we're going through is the understanding of the lily in the field. And you would think, oh, okay, well, government is over and above the individual, but it's actually not. In fact, it's not. Its purpose is to serve the individual. Now, the lily in the field, you've got to consider that the entire field, its catchment area, the grasses, the trees, the microbes, the soil, all those things are there to promote and provide, if you like, the right environment for the lily to prosper, the lily to flower and produce fruit and reproduce. The whole field exists for the benefit of the lily. Government the bureaucracy, the state, all exist for the benefit of the individual. It's no different. This is the Christian principle. Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, but unto God the things that are God's. Now, the first commandment is about loving the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength. Now, if you're going to do that first commandment, which is the greatest, and then love your neighbor as yourself, there's not much room left for government. Government is not God. Government is not mother and father. Government is there as a service. And if it's not there as a service, then it's a tyrant. And that's what we're watching. That's what we're witnessing. As Solzhenitsyn warned us, why did these happen? These things happen to the Soviets, to the Russian people. Why did they happen? Why did 100 million be slaughtered? Because men forgot God. This is what we've got to consider. They turned away. The institutions were not put in proper order. And they became tyrants unto themselves, unanswerable, unaccountable bureaucracies. That's what happened. And so those individuals, when you bear in mind government or bureaucracy or parliaments or judges or whatever, they are only individuals. They're not some super something that they morph into. They're individuals. And if they are not held accountable, then they can err just as much. They are the tyrant. So we've got to consider that in this whole question of freedom, we've got to consider the word responsibility and morality. We've got to look at them. And that's just not for the individual. It's also for the bureaucrat, for the lawyer, the judge, the politician. Anyone has to be ethical and moral and be held responsible for their behavior. And in this instance, under the COVID-19 lockdown, we've got bureaucrats who are making determinations based on really poorly tested science. Your thoughts, please, Robert Clank.
Robert's audio went something like this. C.H. Douglas said the proper relationship in regard to the individual and the group is based around the fact that the field is for the flower, not the flower for the field, and that the individual surrendering their autonomy to government is a consequence of insecurity, a breakdown essentially coming within the family, and the family, of course, is the basis of the individual's security. It is a holocaust of their freedom. The individual initiative, if the person can actually break away from the group and initiate it, causes a sense of joy where their hearts will soar. Many operate in the security of a group. More and more, bigger and bigger groups for security. We see that everywhere. If you have a sense of sufficiency, then you are at least intellectually secure. But unfortunately, the financial system does not allow this. As Douglas points out, it's impossible for communities to actually purchase what they produce because of the accounting method within the financial system. It is designed to take away initiative and subordinate within collectives. The reversal of this is essentially the thrust of what is and what has constituted the Christian civilization. The solution is for the individual to separate from the group, to stand alone and use their own initiative and stand on their own feet.
Thank you, Robert. You reminded me of the writings of Douglas, where he highlighted the under the existing financial accounting system, it is actually financially impossible for us to buy what we produce. We are always having to do more work in order to buy what is already on the shelf. And I think that's really important when you consider security, the individual being secure in their own home, in their own environment, their own family. The work, whatever, the economic or financial system that they operate under. And what we're experiencing is that we're not secure at all. We're not secure at all. We actually, the narrative of security is a false narrative, and it's one of scarcity. is the biggest scarcity, of course, is the financial system. And that's reflected in the, if you like, escalating debt that everyone finds themselves in. They have to keep working. They have to keep on the treadmill in order to keep the payments going, in order to hold onto the car, hold onto the house, hold onto whatever it is that they've got in hoc. And if it's not that, then it's to also pay government costs and fees and taxes that are imposed on them. So security isn't there. In Big Brother government, it's not meant to be there. You are always meant to be insecure and go cap in hand to government. This is where they hold the sway. They actually control people by this method. And of course, behind government is the money power. Behind government is the finance, Bank of International Settlements, World Bank, International Monetary Fund. This is even over and above industry, multinationals, big pharma, military industrial complex. Over and above that is the money power. It's these things we've got to consider, that if we want security, we've got to bring that type of power back to the feet of the individual. That's where real security is. It's where you can ensure your food supply, ensure your home, and ensure your clothing. That's as a material basic, that's at least the minimum. And of course, don't have the wolves at bay barking at the door, causing you to actually give up, surrender something which is completely unnecessary. And that brings an entirely new perspective on it in this freedom potential, the potential for freedom. Your thoughts, please, Beata Lukes.
Yes, the shortage of purchasing power and making everyone insecure and being dependent on government for that security, elusive things. It's security in one sense because it gives you your supper today, but on the other hand, there might be a guy with a gun outside in the street keeping you secure. This is the type of war where the debts of the governments all around the world are causing this kind of spending. Now the money is spent on the war within.
Thank you for that, Beata. That's a very interesting perspective, that yes, it is a war. It's certainly an intellectual war, but it's also a physical war because of these constraints, because of the demand from the individual. The demand for answers from government is the very reverse of what the individual needs. What we need to do is we need to actually reorientate the system. The system is what has to be fixed, because the economic system, we can produce anything we want, but it's the financial system, it's the indebtedness. And of course, it's the influence of the financial system over and above government. It encroaches on government. It is the tyranny that government is answerable to. And so the right to actually control your own government is lost to the individual. It's lost. And so we've got to reconsider these things, that freedom of thought, freedom of expression, freedom of speech, freedom of association, also limiting the bureaucracy, and of course the having control of the crown or having control of government. These things, we are losing more and more of it every single day. So we are losing our security. We are insecure. We're insecure for things like toilet paper, hand sanitizer. We're insecure for food. We're insecure for employment to pay the next round of payments. These things are all encroaching on us. And so the government is losing its ability to speak on behalf of. It's losing its justification because it's becoming the tyranny. And democracy, if you like, or Western democracy is meant to be. Westminster system is supposed to be representative government. And of course, parliament or government itself has become a complete tyrant, answerable to no one. And I mentioned, I think last week, the National Council now of heads of government and the bureaucracy that's in there making decisions and proclamations on a weekly basis. That itself is not representative government. It's totalitarianism. Your thoughts, please, and closing comments, Robert Klink.
Robert Klink had this to say, that we are under attack from all directions and the situation seems hopeless. But all this centralization of power is completely unnatural and does not provide solutions to the people. Those that held onto power use psychological manipulation. In United States, the mainstream media gives you the impression the whole place was on fire. It's probably an exaggeration, but it does instill fear and makes people hostile towards others, and because of this hostility, more controllable. Despite the fact that they appear to be in absolute control of everything, organizations such as the Stasi, the KGB, or the Chinese Secret Service is not as in control as many in the West make out. In China in particular, it has produced a level of prosperity, which means a lot of old people are looking at Hong Kong and the ferment. Ceausescu, Romania, is another illustration. The systems broke down because they were incompatible with the human yearning for freedom, for the ability to choose how they would govern and run their own lives. The problem that faces us is we might be going through a similar kind of system of totalitarian control, and we don't want to do that. In the end, the whole thing will break down and fail because it is completely antithetic to the aspirations of humans. We want to avoid going through that terrible experience that other people have suffered in this last century.
Thank you for that, Robert. Very important and profound points. Your thoughts and closing comments, please, Beata.
Well, I will repeat once more. Please shut down the TV, or better still, throw it from the balcony. Do the same to your microwave oven and your Wi-Fi and all those things that are making you a keg in a machine. You are not a keg in a machine, and you have the freedom to choose things for yourself. So, and remember, the Bible says the meek shall inherit the earth.
Thank you for that, Beata. That's beautifully put. The meek shall inherit the earth. I find that a profound statement, because it's not the strong, it's not those with the biggest bombs and fastest rockets, it's the meek. And if anything, to me, the meek are people who are resolved to bring about God's kingdom. You're not a carpet to be trod on, but rather you're an individual created in the image of God. And what a beautiful thought to pursue God's kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. Now, I'm going to just do a lap and have a quick look at our website. This is showing you the library, as I said before, and very important to consider. There are 5 libraries on our website: Social Credit, the PDF, which is a lot of books, video, podcast, the On Target Archives, but also here is the Actionist Corner. And that's, to me, it's a very important part of where we're working through in this training. So I ask you to consider it. And of course, the podcast is going to be placed up onto the Freedom Potentials website, and you'll see it there. And this list will slowly, slowly grow. So thank you so much for today. And I look forward to catching up to you again next week. Enjoy the week, and we'll catch you next week. This is Arnie Lukes at freedompotentials.org.
The squatter riding on his thoroughbred, down came the troopers, 1, 2, 3. Whose is that jumbuck you've got in the tucker bag? You'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me. Who'll come a-waltzing Matilda, my darling? Who'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me? Waltzing Matilda and leading a water bag, who'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me? But the swagman, he upped and he jumped into the water hole, drowning himself by the cool arbor tree, and his ghost may be heard as it sings in the billabong. Who'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me? Who'll come a-waltzing Matilda, my darling? Who'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me? waltzing Matilda and leading a water bag. Who'll come a waltzing Matilda with me?